The weekend is near, and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
And then there were six, but just how many of them are genuine contenders for this year's premiership? We'll find out this weekend with two blockbuster semi-finals. At the MCG on Friday night, can the Cats finally turn their poor record against the Swans around? We'll ask a very pessimistic Geelong supporter and a confident Sydney supporter. And what about the Giants and the Eagles? The Eagles sensational last week, but can the veterans who are so brilliant against the power continue for the second week in a row? And can the Giants finally prove their doubters wrong? G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth and welcome to the Thursday Match Committee Fox Footy Podcast ahead of semi-final weekend. Just 3 weeks to go and we can hardly contain our excitement here in the podcast bunker. Firstly, let's welcome that very pessimistic Geelong supporter, Max Lawton. Hello, Maxi.
Oh, Benny, thank you for having me. No, look, I'm feeling great.
Self-appointed, I would say, as well.
Look, I'm optimistic that 22 Geelong players are going to head to the MCG on Friday night. They're going to play some sort of football. And there'll be a score recorded.
Well, I look forward to seeing how if that comes to fruition, firstly. And Sarah Ollie for foxfooty.com.au, a very confident Sydney supporter.
Well, quietly confident, but Maxie, the Cats won't have two bad games in a row. That seldom happens, so I'd be a little bit more upbeat if I were you.
Well, there's already been a couple of selection things flagged for the weekend. And we are limited by two games, so we're doing a two-game podcast today. But if you had to make a Match Committee big call, Fox Footy Podcast Match Committee big call, Maxi, who would it be and who would it involve?
Well, so mine would actually involve the Saturday night game.
Yes.
And I feel like we need to get this topic out there, the Nick Nanalui thing.
Yep.
I don't know his injury status. I am not a doctor. That's why I'm in this profession and not doctoring. But
the podcast profession.
Yes. Professional podcaster. It's on my resume and my LinkedIn. It's great. Yeah. Check me out. If you're going to go for the West Coast is in the window right now. We knew that going into this season. We said, all right, they've got all these veterans. They're
oldest
going for
list in the
right
competition.
Now. Absolutely. You want to be trying to win flags when you can, when your window's open. It seems like there's a chance right now, right? And they're in a semi-final all of a sudden. And GWS has just gotten a bunch of injuries. And we know how much of a different team they are with Nick Nat.
I think I know where you're heading now.
Why don't you play him?
Right.
Just try, you know? If he's not fit, he's got a whole preseason to get ready again.
His knee looked okay in that video he uploaded on the siren. He was bouncing all over the joint
with
his mates.
There was some training vision during the week where he looked pretty good as well. If you're going to... We said this last week. If you're going to have an injured player, you force him back in for finals because the whole point is to get people ready for the pointy end of the season, flags fly forever, get those premierships when you possibly can. I don't think they can win the flag either way.
Yeah.
But they're much more of a chance if he plays. I would tip them if he was playing.
Have they got anything to lose if they do play him?
Well, if he's underdone and something happens.
The concern is if it's 20 minutes into the first quarter and you'd expect the Giants to bring a little more intensity than what they did last week and Nick Nat blows up. The thing that does work in his favour is that there's no Shane Mumford.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So he might be coming up against Rory Lobb.
Oh, Dawson Simpson.
Then, or Big Dawson.
But then do you need him? Do you need to take that risk? If they don't have their Mumford, do you risk your Nick Nat? I don't know.
Well, because I don't know that The problem with West Coast has been all season that they haven't been able to get that game going where he controls things around the ground and they have all that clearance dominance. And in doing so, their midfield's been bad. And people have been criticising that all year. I think you bring that in, that fixes the midfield somewhat. And I don't know that the midfield necessarily gets better with Vardy and Petrie tapping it
Although,
down to them.
Although, they held Ryder last week. They did a superb job
Ryder
against Paddy Ryder, the All-Australian ruckman.
That's very fair.
Yeah, Petrie and Vardy, excellent last week. What about your Match Committee big call there, Sarah?
Well, I thought I was going left field, but I think Max has taken it fully left field. I'm going to go with a Swan.
Yes.
I want to bring in Lewis.
Dean Towers is already playing.
Yes, I know. I want to bring in Lewis Melican.
Oh,
he didn't play last week. I think Harry Cunningham came in for him and didn't have a bad game. I think he had 19 touches, but I think all the Swans played pretty well last week. I think he'll probably be the omission. I'd bring back the Melly, bring back the Pelican. He'll serve us well in the back line.
And he'll play, so he'll probably play one-on-one and particularly on maybe on a guy like Daniel Menzel. So similar size.
Yes, correct.
So that leads us into the first game, which is Geelong v Sydney. And there's a graphic in front of us here, ladies and gents, that shows that Sydney have won 5 of the past 6 games between these two sides. The very first one of that streak, Maxi, was a 110-point victory to the Swans at the SCG that night, which was a terrible, terrible night. But The what is it about the Swans that they've been able to have the wood over the Cats since 2014?
So I think they're just styles make matches, much like they make boxing fights and UFC fights. That,
yes,
and they're the complete kryptonite for Geelong. The way that they just stifle all the attempts going forward. Geelong's game is about getting that high press, getting all those forward 50 entries. And even if they're not high quality, getting quantity. We saw the quantity they had in the prelim last year.
Yep.
But the Swans were the best team at taking those on.
Absorbing.
Mm. And then not letting Geelong get their ball movement going when they had the ball at the other end of the ground. And then that's what Richmond did last week as well. And it's why Richmond did so well. Geelong, when they're stifled in that way, cannot score. And we've seen that against Sydney time after time in the last few years. And I don't see a way for them to fix that without going a completely different way of playing, which they tried to do at the start of the season. The prelim last year, we remember, that changed Geelong.
Yep.
That scarred them so much that Chris Scott went in and changed the way they played. Tom Hawkins was kicking more goals. They were playing a very different way. They weren't getting all these inside 50s, and it was unsustainable. So they went back to it. It served them well. It got them second. But then it's gotten to this point, and now they're against Sydney again. It's the worst-case scenario for any team, and it's the double worst-case scenario for Geelong.
Yes, and you say that you're a very optimistic Geelong supporter there, Maxie. Just on the last three losses in particular, which have been by similar margins, Sarah, 46 points back in round 20 early this year, and then 37 points in the prelim last year, and then 38 points in round 16, which was the game before that. In all three of those games, Geelong have been held to 60, 60, and 61 points.
They're consistent, given that.
Yeah, they are very consistent. The Swans have scored 98, 97, and 107. So three identical, almost, score lines we've seen in the past three games. Geelong haven't been able to score against the Swans in recent times.
Yeah, and as Maxie said, is that a matchup thing? Because the Swans, you're saying, are scoring quite well in these games, and that isn't traditionally their strong point either. So maybe it's just this thing where they match up so well. I think these past three games and three wins have all been away from the SCG as well. So that's another anomaly. Two wins down at Cardinia Park and the one at the MCG. They come to the MCG again, and it's a different ground for both teams to play on. And why is it that the Swans are able to maximise their game style on the MCG, but perhaps not the Cats, Maxie?
I think it's more that Geelong just isn't able to. The interesting thing is, of the three last games, the two home and away games, both at Simmons.
Yep.
The prelim, of course, at the MCG, as this one is. The MCG game is the one where Geelong actually had the inside 50 advantage. They had 32 last time. They had plus 9 in round 16 last year, and they broke even this time, round 20 this year, I believe it was.
Yep.
So there's something about the MCG where maybe that's just a one-game anomaly, but Geelong had a chance. They had plenty of opportunities, but we saw in that prelim last time, that first quarter, they kicked inaccurately, Sydney kicked way ahead, and it never felt like Geelong was in the game after that. You get the feeling that Sydney could easily just break through and do really, really well in the start of this game and put it out of its misery straight
away. Which is what happened in the prelim last year. Yeah. They kicked 7 goals to zip in that first quarter and were sensational. That didn't happen last week. It was in the last quarter where the dam wall broke for the Cats, Sarah. They scored 40 points for the game, which was their lowest score since 2014, their lowest at the MCG since 1963. And their kicking efficiency of 49% was the lowest ever recorded that Champion Data had recorded. The most interesting thing that came out of the game, and Barry Hall noted it in his foxsports.com.au Draft Stars column during the week, that Richmond were showing great, I suppose they were so united on the field. So when someone went down, there was always two or three Tigers helping that player up. Classic examples when Patrick Dangerfield copped a really big hit, there was no Geelong players that were there to help him up.
And is that finals fatigue that we're hearing? The double F word, which we don't want to talk about. But I mean, the Tigers were united, and I think when Corey Ellis had that massive collision with Patrick Dangerfield, and you saw that every Tiger rushed to him, and I think Jack Riewoldt on AFL 360 said this week, that was my favourite moment of the match. Can you believe it? Because it's he's so symbolic of how the Tigers have turned around, and they have this fortified unity now, and they believe in their game plan. I'm not sure if Geelong have that same unity or that same belief, and I think when someone like a Cam Guthrie goes down, who's had such a sensational year and has been so pivotal for kind of taking away that Dangerwood tag, that they're a two-person midfield, that's got to play on their minds. He's been such a big player for them all year.
He's been good.
You two know you're Cats fans. I mean, what impact do you think that's going to have?
I think a reasonable impact. I think Mitch Duncan's definitely been even better of those two, of the ones who needed to step up.
Best star this year.
But he could have been in the squad of 40 for All-Australian very easily.
Yep.
Guthrie's been reasonably good. But there are a few players like that who need to step up. And I don't know about you, Benny, but the thing that worried me as a fan last week against Richmond wasn't that we lost. I thought Richmond was going to win. But it was the way they lost and the way that so many players who have been good look terrible. Like Jordan Murdoch looked terrible. Lockie Henderson had one of his worst games
for the
club.
Yeah, and he's had a really good year, actually.
And I don't, it was really strange and it really didn't help. And there was quite a few players like that. Motlop, I've said this before, he doesn't seem to fit in that side. I know you want that X factor and all that stuff, but he just does not play well under pressure. And the kicking efficiency, 49% kicking efficiency, lowest ever recorded by Champion Data.
Mm. That
Geelong put together.
That comes down to Richmond's maniacal pressure, though, doesn't it? It was unbelievable. Yeah. They were chafed to within an inch of their life.
So when it comes to X factor, there are three players that have been linked to the Cats for the upcoming trade period that all have X factor. Jake Stringer's the latest one, and Robbo last night on 360 via the Herald Sun as well broke that Stringer and the Bulldogs have sort of come to a bit of an agreement that they're not supposed to be together in 2018. And then, of course, there's Gary Ablett, the $500,000 question of whether he gets there. And then Devin Smith as well, who might play for the Giants this weekend, injury dependent. Should there be a priority list, Maxi, in terms of who they target out of those three? Should they lose this weekend and maybe expose a little bit more flaws?
Well, I think either way, they're definitely going for those sort of players. You can tell the Menzel, the Motlop situations, a lot of players at the bottom of the list, your George Hall and Smiths.
GHS.
That may not be coming back to the club next year. You get that feeling. And they're looking to make salary cap room because that's been their big issue. That's why we were surprised when they sent out Caddy. I think that was a lot of that. Devin Smith seems like the safe one for me. Menzel got dropped because of the defensive pressure stuff that we talked about. They thought they wouldn't have an impact.
That's not Smith's strong point, I wouldn't
have
thought.
No, it's not. He's one of the better ones at GWS, but he's still not his strong point.
Literally anyone seems to be better than Daniel Menzel at that. So that could be a lot of that. So he's going to bring that as well. The Stringer thing is fascinating to me, as much for what it means for any other club as it means for the Western Bulldogs. Briefly on the Dogs, are they not trying to win a flag next year? They just care about culture more than winning a flag?
It's a tough, tough call, Sarah.
Culture is the foundation, so isn't it, of everything? I mean, you think about, you know, the Bloods culture and how strong that's been and how you don't tolerate people that don't buy into your culture. I think it must be bad. I mean,
we're not inside
those four walls. We don't know what's going on, but it's kind of new age of them, isn't it? Like this unconscious uncoupling or something. I think Gwyneth Paltrow termed that when she split up with Chris Martin. Yeah,
yes.
They didn't want to say it was a divorce, but that's what it is. It's a bit of a euphemism. We're just going off topic here, aren't
that's
we?
Sucks.
But if they can come to an agreement where both parties are happy and both parties get something good out of it, you have to pursue it.
I would prefer talent than culture. Just me. I would prefer
you
to
like living on the edge there, Maxie.
I mean, I understand Sydney has that culture. I also think that a lot of that sort of intangible stuff gets ascribed to clubs after the fact. I think success comes and then we say, oh, and they had all this stuff around them. Look at them. It's like, yeah, well, that happened because they won games. We try and say correlation is causation sometimes when it may not be. So for me, it's just so strange. And the fact is there are more problems than that at that club, clearly, because we've seen that the list manager might be going. They might be changing that. There's so many issues at the Dogs right now. It's very odd.
It is very odd. It is worth discussing here on the Fox Footy podcast with Max Lawton and social commentator Sarah Ollie over in the corner there.
Thanks. I don't mind that, actually. Input. Yeah.
Social commentator?
You're a Jane Caro type.
Speaking of September, Mr. September at the moment is Josh Kennedy. His performances in September, and he's probably not grouped in the big game players, probably not in the Buddy class, the Ablett class, but his record as a Swan in September, Sarah, is quite phenomenal.
Unparalleled. And the inaugural winner of the Gary Ayres medal last year for the best player in the final series.
My old neighbour. And
oh, really?
Yes, when he was a Geelong coach, he lived down the street from me in Roeville.
He was commuting from Roeville to Geelong.
My understanding was that he had home in Roeville.
Gosh.
Very odd.
That's a lot of petrol case to claim on tax later.
There we go.
Well, that's what my mum told me anyway. Maybe that was a lie. Right.
Good morning to Mrs. Lawton if she's listening.
Back to Mr. September. I mean, if you think about that grand final performance last year, I mean, if the Swans win, arguably he wins.
He gets Norm
Smith.
He
wins a Norm Smith. Yep. Three goals and what did he have? 30-odd touches.
A lot of the ball.
One of the better quarters you'll see in a grand final.
It was inspirational and it couldn't get his team over the line, but he wasn't left wanting. I mean, the thing with Josh Kennedy is he's so consistent. he really never has a bad game. And sometimes you'll be like, oh, he hasn't got much of the ball, but he's still, you know, he's had 12 clearances and, you know, 24 touches. He's just a workhorse. And his strength, the way he's able to shirk tackles and just get that handball out, he's fantastic. And he joked on the couch on Monday, he doesn't really like pre-seasons. That's why he thinks that maybe he performs well to the back end of the year. But I think he's being very modest. I don't know. Is it in the genes? Is it a Kennedy thing? I'm not sure.
I think it's the same thing as Scott Pendlebury. It's that it's not sexy to constantly bring up Kennedy and Pendlebury as like some of the top five, top 10 best players in the comp. But you look at the MVP voting. I thought that was interesting. Buddy didn't make the top 10 last year. Is there any world in which Lance Franklin in any season over the last 10 was not a top 10 AFL player?
Yeah. Still number five this year and by quite a margin, I found a bit startling. But
It's the strange thing where people just forget how great you are if you aren't the hot new flavour of the month and if you aren't consistently building. How do you build on averaging 30 disposals in finals?
Yes. It is quite unbelievable. He does average 30 disposals, 17 contested, 7 clearances, 6 tackles in his 20 finals games.
Against the best under huge pressure. Incredible.
Yeah, it is a phenomenal record. So we'll get a tip now for this game. Of course, not only are these two sides playing for a spot in a preliminary final against Adelaide at the Adelaide Oval, in a couple of weeks' time, but also playing for the Jason Mooney David Spriggs Cup. So looking forward to seeing who that takes that out. So Maxi, pessimistic or optimistic?
I think you can probably guess. I think the Swans, what's their average? They won by 38, 37 and 46. So I'm going to say they win by 41 points.
41, right. They won by 43 in the win previously.
Well, I've done my maths wrong. I've made that incorrect. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Sarah, are you confident?
I think Geelong will bounce back, but not enough for the win. So I think
6 goals, Geelong win. Wow, Sarah Olley, can't believe she said it.
I think they'll perform better than you expect, Maxi, but I think the Swans will probably win by about 3 goals.
Right. It'll be a big game, and we'll have full coverage on foxfooty.com.au. And, of course, you can see every moment of that semi-final live, free of ads, siren to siren there. So looking forward to seeing how that one goes down. And then on Saturday night, a huge game at Spotless Stadium between the Greater Western Sydney Giants and the West Coast Eagles, which I'm looking forward to seeing how West Coast plays, because they played almost two decent quarters last week, Maxi, and then absorbed well in the start of extra time, then a couple of fantastic individual efforts in that second part of extra time. Can they back it up, though? Was last week their grand final for 2017?
It's so weird, the Eagles, because I was saying for the last probably 2 months of the season, I don't want them in the finals because they're not going to have it.
I was certainly saying that too. Yeah.
And then they get in there, and Port Adelaide played better than West Coast. Port Adelaide should have won that game, but they didn't. And so West Coast is here. And now I'm very interested to see how they go, because this is uncharted territory for what my expectations were. And they're certainly getting a good chance at it, because GWS are losing Cameron and Mumford. And so you think, why can't West Coast do well? What did they lose by, 3-4 goals last time they played, round 22? And that was
less than that, I think.
And it blew out in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah. And Josh Kelly was essentially all to blame, and he's obviously a big topic of discussion here as well. But you'd think that they're every chance to win this game, you know? Aren't they? Are they not, Sarah?
I think what West Coast have working in their favours, and I think you saw it in that first final, is that there's a few players that their time's almost up and they've got a lot to play for. Matt Prittis was sensational against Port Adelaide, and there's a lot of love there with West Coast, and I think that's been the knock on the Giants. They're all talent and maybe not enough love, but I think there's going to be a bit of a change-up this week at selection. I think they'll go smaller, and I think when they've gone smaller this year is when the Giants have played their best footy. I remember against Melbourne in Canberra, I think it was. That was when their pressure was the best it's been all year. So I think if they go back to having a bit of a smaller, especially forward line, that could really work in their favour.
Just speaking of the West Coast love, so Jeremy McGovern told foxfooty.com.au on Saturday night that he would jump in front of a train for Matt Prittis.
What's the situation there? Is he like tied on the tracks? I'm not sure. Black and white cartoon?
Couldn't quite decipher whether he would also catch a grenade for him to borrow Bruno Mars lyrics, but to say the least, there is a lot of love. McGovern was full of praise and admiration for the three outgoing Eagles. But I think they just, as you said, they proved that they're not dead yet, to use a Monty Python line there, Maxi.
The most disappointing thing of that final is actually Petrie not doing a Frank the Tank Redux. Surely.
That was had to be done. What about Josh Kennedy as well, of the Eagles, we should say. So held to one goal by Tom Cleary during the game. Well. Really good performance from Cleary. Then he finds a way to get involved in the game, kicks the last two of the game and finishes with three goals. Amazing how a full forward, a genuine proper full forward, still finds a way, Sarah, to get himself in the game.
And that's why he's such a champion player. And we've said it all year in this podcast that perhaps here in Victoria we don't give him enough credit. He's an absolute star. And that first goal, did he toe poke it through? Mm. And I think at that point, Port could have been 13 points up and it looks like, oh, well, it's over here. And he wills himself in, you know, unconventional ways. He wasn't taking those big marks. He toe pokes it through. And he's just one of those players that means you cannot count West Coast out because he's such an important player. He's so influential. And he finds a way to get himself into the contest, even if it is in extra time.
So who plays on him, Maxie? So there's three options for the Giants. They've got Aiden Corr, who's done jobs during the year. Adam Tomlinson as well. Tomlinson played predominantly on Jenkins, I think, last week, or Phil Davis. I would like to see Phil Davis as captain, co-captain of this footy club, stand up and play on Josh Kennedy.
I think that there will be a leadership component to that for sure, because Kennedy is probably the one West Coast player who can just break that game open.
Yep.
So Phil Davis is on there saying, I'll take this, I'll make sure that doesn't happen for us. If that works, that should really help them emotionally as well.
I agree. What about the whole GWS selection fascination? Stevie J likely to play. I think he did enough in the scratch match last week. His second half was excellent. Just did a couple of Stevie J things, a few look away handballs and fend offs it, and he moved okay. So I think he'll come in this week. But no Mumford and Cameron is going to make it very tough for the Giants. And we'll make selection on Thursday night very interesting, Sarah.
Bring in Stevie J.
Yes.
Who cares if he's lost a bit of speed? Who cares if he's not the best defensive player? He can do some freak things. And they looked a bit juvenile in their forward line, I thought, against Adelaide. And he brings that experience. Get him in the team. The thing I'm looking at here is GWS's scoring woes. And it says from rounds 1 to 14, they scored 104 points on average, which was the third best in the comp. And from rounds 15 to now, 81, which is the 14th best. Does that coincide with Jeremy Cameron going down with hamstring injuries at the back end of the season?
Might have something to do with it as well. And Cameron obviously not playing again this weekend. They're also struggling to get the ball in there as much. They're averaging five less inside 50s during that time. So I think
it doesn't seem like a lot, but that's 5th to 12th.
Yes, that is. It's a big, yes.
Massive.
That's a big drop off. So it lends to the question, with Mumford also being out, does Big Dorso play this weekend, Max?
Well, the criticism of GWS last week was that they were too tall. So I could very much see them not bringing Simpson in, because I don't think Rory Lobb's been very good either.
No.
And if you're committing him to the ruck, that gets him out of the forward line, and maybe that makes that less of an issue as well. You bring those smalls in, your Stevie J types. That could really loosen up the forward line. And for GWS, talk about their lack of forward pressure and their conversion inside 50 has gone down. 27% rounds 1 to 14, rank 3. 22% ranked 15 since round 15. So they really need to improve on that, and I imagine that would be a way of doing that.
So Kingy's looked at it on 360 last night, Sarah, and looked at the Melbourne game when they played at Manuka, and there was a smaller team that day. They didn't have any. They didn't have Jeremy Cameron that day or Jonathan Patton. Patton will play this weekend, but they looked quick, and they linked up so well through the middle. And that's what we might see this Giants side play like, maybe on West Coast selection dependent.
Well, if they play like that, West Coast don't have a hope in hell. Melbourne looked rubbish that day. And I think that's when a lot of commentators started going, yeah, well, the Ferrari's getting out of first gear. It's coming into second. It's getting out of the garage. They looked unbelievable that day. But it's been a long time since they've played like that. I don't know if you can just click your fingers and it happens.
What about the tip for this game? This is the John Giles Cup, as well as for a place against Richmond at the MCG the week after. Who's your tip for the John Giles Cup here, Maxie?
Gee, that's interesting. GWS by a goal. I reckon we get this as the close one again. West Coast is going to end up producing two good finals. Thanks, West Coast, for being in September.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
West Coast fans have given us plenty of fantastic memories, not only last week, but the week before against Adelaide as well. Maybe it could be a third week in a row, Sarah.
No, I'm going to go with the Giants.
Right.
And I think they might win a bit more comfortably. I think West Coast may have given everything last week, and who knows what effect that will have, that extra time and also the travel factor. Yeah. I think the Giants won't play two shockers in a row.
So, and one thing that might buoy the Giants heading into this game is the re-signing or reported re-signing, thanks to Jared Waitley on AFL 360, of Josh Kelly for 2 years. Now, this deal, potential signing, has been bandied around the media for quite some time, but Jared was, I think, the first person to genuinely go with it last night. Basically, all the groundwork has been done. It's just literally putting pen to paper now. So that must be a big confidence booster going into this game.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it also says, combined with the Lachie Whitfield news, a bit about where this club is.
Yes.
They've been trying to say, no, we're not just a... We're not going to grow these talents and then see them go elsewhere. We're not going to become that Gold Coast situation, which David King also floated on the couch based on their list. I think we can talk about that in a second. But this clearly says there are people, there are players who are elite in this competition and want to stay there. Josh Kelly came third in the MVP voting. He's an incredible player. And 2 years makes the most sense for him as well. I mean, if you're purely based on money, sure, go to North. But GWS is obviously in the flag window right now, and you want to try and win one before you go and get that cash.
So Kingy on the couch, you just mentioned this beforehand, said the Giants had the potential to be the Gold Coast Suns of 2018, just with how their list is placed. And it's interesting he said that, because they gave up so many players in last year's trade period. 8 players were traded out, and Deledio was the only one that came in. And so many players went to Carlton and other clubs. Do they have the potential, Sarah? Can you see a drop-off that dramatic?
It's a bold and brave call from Kingy, but I see where he's going, because you can't keep all that top-end talent. And when you get in draft picks, Riley Beveridge is strong on this. He says draft picks are at their, I guess, their best value, you know, when they're a draft pick, before they're taken, before they become a player. And the issue is, I mean, Josh Kelly's re-signed for 2 years, but it's 2 years. It's not a five-year deal, is it? So what does that say? That this is a two-year window where hopefully we win a flag, and if we don't, well, I'm going. See
there's
ya.
There's a lot of short-term contracts being signed at GWS at the moment. Hopper, a couple of weeks ago. Yes. Dylan Scheel earlier on this year. Lachie Whitfield was only a two-year deal on Wednesday as well. There's a lot of short-term contracts.
I think King's point was contingent on the idea of Kelly potentially leaving sooner rather than later as well. So let's keep that in mind. But it was more about the fact, as you say, they have... Of course, we said they had no depth all year, and then they played all these guys and they kept winning. So, you know, what do we know?
We've mentioned the MVP voting a couple of times, which sort of leads us into a couple of stories just to lengthen out the podcast a little bit, because we know that there's plenty of other fans who want to hear about just news besides the two semifinals this weekend. Dustin Martin won the MVP on the other night. It comes after he won a stackload of media awards just after round 23. A short, sharp, acceptance speech afterwards as well. It could be the first, Sarah, of a couple of awards acceptance speeches.
Yeah, keep it short and sweet, Dusty. I've got no problem with that. He lets his football do the talking, and I'm totally fine with that. A deserved winner, and yeah, I think come Brownlow night, he'll be up there again on the podium.
Is it 500-odd votes that he beat Danger by
it
there?
It was a landslide.
Which... Yeah. Okay, so I don't remember who it
what's
was.
What's your bar here? What's your bar?
Max is going to be in his bonnet.
Someone yesterday said, Dustin Martin had the best season I've ever seen.
Mark Williams. Lee Matthews said that on 5AA yesterday.
What does that guy know about AFL? Look at me. I've never played footy at any level. Look, the gap between Dangerfield and Martin is ridiculous in that situation. It's as if, because Dangerfield got suspended in the Brownlow, everyone's like, oh yeah, well, Dusty was the best player anyway and was going to win anyway.
Mm.
No, they're incredibly equal. Dangerfield had a remarkable season again. Those two are 1A and 1B for the best player in the competition. And maybe it's just a quirk of the voting. Maybe it's just a quirk of the fact that it's player voting that made there be such a difference. Because I feel like player voting in almost any sport ends up being purely about the narrative more than anything. Because they're not watching every game. They're caring about their own.
No.
So they honestly don't have as broad of a view as people watching the game do in some aspects.
I don't mind that, though, if it differentiates itself to the Brownlow. Like, the last thing you want is the MVP becoming...
The award.
But that's the pseudo Brownlow, do you know what I mean?
But that's the thing. That's what I think it was, because everyone thought, well, Dusty's clearly the favourite going to win that. He's all the talk, and we're talking about him signing. So they just everyone voted for him first.
But there won't be a landslide difference between Dusty and Danger come Brownlow night.
No, there won't. But I think that was created in the voting based on the narrative, because Dangerfield is ineligible to win that. I think the Brownlow will be a more accurate reflection of how close those two players are.
Dusty wasn't the only Tiger to walk away with the big individual award this week. How about Jacob Townsend winning the JJ Liston medal for the best and fairest VFL player?
How many games did he play?
He played...
He missed a bunch, didn't
he? Yeah, he missed a bunch at the end. Off the top of my head, it was around 13 or 14, something like that. So he missed... Because he only played the last game of the home and away season in the from an AFL perspective. Second last. And then the final. So he's only played three AFL games. And there was a Richmond bye as well in there in the VFL. Mm. So a phenomenal effort. The Townsend story just continues to get better, Sarah.
The Liston Norm Smith double, perhaps.
Oh, it's all Norm current. Smith?
Yep, lock it in. No. It's weird when he wins it in a losing grand final.
Oh, Max. We're just really rubbing
the dream is dead.
Couple of other things just before we move on. Tommy Morris for foxfooty.com.au on Monday had a story about Josh Shankey. An interesting story where he reported that the Lions, there's talk among the Lions players that are a little bit concerned that Josh might want out of the club. Nothing about requesting a trade or anything like that, but that he packed up a fair percentage of his belongings to the point where he hasn't left a lot to come back to, should he come back. It's an interesting storyline, Sarah, where I'm not 100% sure where it's heading.
It's a bit Marbo. It's a bit the vibe, isn't it? The vibe amongst the players is that he... I'm just going everywhere today.
Cultural.
Yeah. Social commentator-esque.
But I thought it was a really interesting article because it was told from that different perspective.
Yes.
It wasn't a manager or...
No, or club,
was,
even.
Exactly. It was from the players and the feeling that they have from what they see and I guess what they hear from the player himself. So I thought it was a really great story from Tom. And, I mean, he signed a 2-year deal, didn't he, in June? So does that mean it gives Brisbane a bit more bargaining power? How does that work?
Yeah, he can go under, I suppose, special circumstances around leave, potentially, if they weren't able to get a deal done. But it certainly gives the Lions bargaining power in terms of salary.
Were they not going to be trading him anyway, if he's going?
But he's just signed a 2-year deal, though.
Sure. Figure that out.
If he's just signed a 2-year deal, I'm sure the Lions in June weren't expecting that they were going to trade him again.
He signed the 2-year deal and then several other players signed on after he signed that deal, didn't he?
Yeah, and I think Mitch Robinson in a column as well said that it was one of the best confidence boosters for the club. Mitch wrote a column for foxfooty.com.au, so watch this space. I'm sure the team at Fox Footy will be all over that one. Mm. And the last one that we just wanted to talk about was the delisting of Jack Tringove earlier on this week, which really resonated with our audience, which I found fascinating. And David Schwartz's comments in particular about Mark Neild should shoulder a lot of the blame for not only Jack Tringove's demise at the D's, but also Jack Grimes' demise, which he left exactly 12 months prior, Maxie. Your take?
It's a tough situation. You get it. He's not going to play. He's not going to play senior games for them. But, gee, it's a mark of what that club was, what that club did to a bunch of players. It's a tough situation, isn't it?
That heading, was it, he ruined two kids' careers?
Yes.
It was very emotive and...
In fairness to Ox as well, is that he heard the news live.
Yeah.
So he didn't have time to really think about it.
Yeah. I mean, Jack Tringove has had that horrible navicular injury, hasn't he? And we know that can ruin the best of careers. So I think that plays into it as well. But as Maxie said, it's kind of a marker of where they were and I guess now where they're going. And it's a shame because I think he's a pretty much loved player at the club from what I've heard. And I think a lot of his teammates would be saddened to see him go.
No doubt about that. So all the best to Jack. And his manager, Adam Romanaskis, did say yesterday that he is keen to try and get to another AFL club. And his VFL form, I think, has shown this year that he does have the potential to offer something at another AFL club. Any one of you two prepared to put any bets on ahead of Geelong v Sydney just to make it interesting? Or
I've already foolishly done that with one of our directors, Tad.
Tadron?
Yes.
What's the bet? Tadron is a Swan supporter.
Sydney was on the... he looked at the line and said, that's too high. And I foolishly said...
It's a line bet, right.
Yeah, 16.5 points.
Right.
Swans.
You being the betting expert, Maxie, yourself?
Well, it's also I'm going to win a six-pack of something I don't drink. So, great. This is real. It'll come out well for me. So, Sarah, if you want to grab on those odds, please. That's quite the offer.
16.5. You said 3 goals.
I did, didn't I? Yes. Should I put my money where my mouth is?
I'm going to a bottle shop. I may as well buy 2 lots.
Okay, sure, Maxie, sign me up. Yeah. And gamble responsibly.
Yes, of course. Always gamble responsibly, which is what we do in the Fox Footy office. Team, that has been a huge semi-final preview edition of the Fox Footy podcast. 2 huge games this weekend, which you can see live on Fox Footy in HD, looking very spick and speck indeed. So look out for that one. And of course, we'll be back for the Monday Fox Footy podcast. Tom will be fresh back from his Sydney sojourn, so looking forward to that. You'll have plenty of stories. Stories that can only be appropriate to be shared on the airwaves as well. And keep clicking back, of course, to foxfooty.com.au.